Hi there, and welcome to our podcast, Mindfulness at Work. I'm Cara Pollard.
And I'm Beth Miles. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Cara.
Here we are at Mindfulness at Work.
It's great to be here.
Yes, and I'm thrilled and excited to have the amazing Christy Keating with us. Christy is a colleague of mine who I've known for a long time. She and I did the same training together, and she works as part of our team, and we're so honored to have her on the podcast today. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Cara. Hi, Beth. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah. As we all stay in place, it's even more lovely to connect across all these. Where are you, Christy?
So I am located just outside of Seattle. So yeah, sort of where the whole thing started in the United States. So it is really nice to connect with people.
Yeah.
Right.
So we have Seattle, San Francisco, and Chicago all represented.
Yes. Great cities. Great cities. So Christy, why don't you tell us a little bit about, not only are you an amazing mom, a lawyer, a PCI graduate, but how about you tell us about your two businesses that you're currently running?
Absolutely. So yeah, I run two small businesses side by side. The first one that I founded myself is called The Heartful Parent. And it's through The Heartful Parent that I do one-on-one coaching with parents. And I also run an online membership group for parents called The Heartful Parent Academy, where nice. I have a lot of online trainings. And, right now during the pandemic, we're doing weekly member calls just so people can get some additional support. Mm-hmm. I also run a company that I took over from the founder called Savvy Parents Safe Kids. And in that business, I primarily do public speaking, but also some one-on-one coaching with parents. And my focus there is on child sexual abuse prevention and assault prevention, primarily sexual assault prevention for teens and early 20-somethings. And for that, you mentioned that I'm a PCI graduate, and obviously that's sort of, I'm also a certified positive discipline educator. Mm-hmm. And those certifications really form the basis of my work with The Heartful Parent. But with Savvy Parents Safe Kids, I use my background as an attorney. I actively practiced law for almost 20 years as a criminal prosecutor in Seattle, Washington. And my specialty, especially in the latter part of my career, was prosecuting sexually violent predators. And so I use the knowledge that I gained from that to teach parents and professionals, how do we keep children safe from child sexual abuse? What are the red flags and warning signs? Mm-hmm. How do we talk to kids about safety in a way that doesn't scare them, but really empowers them,
right?
And gives them important information. So I speak all over the country with Savvy Parents, and my goal is to get as much information out there to as many people as possible about how we can keep kids safe.
Yeah. Well, it's a big undertaking, I know, because sometimes we can't even dream up some of the situations that we find ourselves in. And so I think it's imperative and important information. Within the context of this pandemic and us, within, 24 hours or whatever it was, moving from, being in the classroom to learning online, what are some of the biggest takeaways you see from making this change and keeping everybody safe at the same time?
Yeah, so obviously this pandemic has created a whole host of new issues for parents. Everything from those of us who are trying to work at home while we have children at home,
right?
which is an interesting challenge, to maintaining or helping our children learn to process their big feelings through all of this, while we are dealing with big feelings ourselves,
right?
Of grief and loss and stress. But there's this added piece that has been sort of particular importance or interest, I should say, to me, which is this the increase in time that all of our children and ourselves, for that matter, are spending online.
Yes.
And how we keep kids safe when they're being required, in many cases, to be online to do their schooling. I know it depends on where you live as to whether or not there's really online learning options that are happening. That's been an ever-evolving situation here in Washington. But most kids, I think I can say this pretty safely, most kids, including mine, and we have pretty strict screen time limits in our home, most kids are spending a significantly higher amount of time on screens, which just opens them up to additional risk.
Yes.
That's important we talk about.
Yeah, it's very important because so they didn't know how to do online classes. They didn't know, certainly, I don't think, how to do online extracurriculars. And so I'd love for you to talk about the difference between counting those things and perhaps even taking an art class or even beginning something of interest that they hadn't done before. So how creating and consuming are very different and distinct within this pandemic.
Yeah. So, well, the first thing I think we need to all sort of come to grips with is any screen time limitations that you had in place before, like especially if you have school age children, likely need to go right out the window. And we need to sort of understand that for this time, and this doesn't mean forever, right? We don't have to change things forever, but during this time, we have to understand that the schooling that they're doing, we can't really count that against them as screen time. Mm-hmm. Just in the way that when they were going into school and using screens at school, we probably weren't counting that as screen time. But I hear parents sort of in a panic, like, oh my goodness, my kid's on this, you know, spending time on the screen for, I don't know, 4 or 6, 8 hours a day. What do I do? This is too much. And so we have to sort of separate out what those activities are. And anything that is school related, you know, whether it's taking content in from the teacher or being asked to produce content. So that's, you know, creating and consuming. I think if it's school related, that's just, we have to sort of put that in a box and set it aside and just understand that that is what it is for right now. But what we're also seeing right now, which has been so phenomenal with my, so I have a 5th grader and I have a 3-year-old. So my 5th grader, who previously really spent very little time on screens, has seen a dramatic increase in that. And so what I'm finding is that there's been some really amazing opportunities for her to use screens in a way that allows her to create new things and to explore the world in a way that she can't, she literally cannot do right now because we cannot leave the house.
Right.
So those to me are feeling really like positive interactions with our screens.
Yes.
For example, at every day at 11 o'clock, 11 o'clock in Seattle, she is taking an online art class from Mo Willems, who is a children's
beautiful illustrator.
Yeah. He wrote, you know, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus and the whole Elephant and Piggy series and the Nuffle Bunny series. And he's a character, and he gets on every day on YouTube and produces a video where kids can learn to doodle along and create the things that he does. And that is a different kind of learning.
Yes.
But my child is actively creating as she does it. And then it inspires her to sort of, after the lesson is over, to continue creating.
Nice.
That is an amazing use of screen technology to inspire and sort of motivate our kids to try some new things that maybe they weren't doing before.
Right.
And don't you think too, Chrissy, or I keep hearing this, and I think it is such a good reminder, really, when it comes down to it, is the ultimate privilege that our kids have, because that they can connect. And I know for like my daughter's school, she's older, she's a senior in high school. There's a tremendous program that their school threw together, you know, in no time at all, to Cara's point. And she can stay connected, where I know that there's many kids that their schools didn't have that structure in place. And so in a way, like, it is, we are so lucky. And yet it's this double-edged sword, right? Because it used to be the thing that we wanted to put, you know, we never wanted them to go toward, or we wanted to minimize it. And now it is really this tremendous influx of, to your point, like Mo Willems and the guy, the beautiful Wendy McNaughton, who writes, she illustrates for the Times as well as her own stuff. She's doing courses online for free for kids, like this incredible community that's coming out just to offer gifts, mm-hmm. And then our schools and our teachers. And, but it is a real flip on what we used to think about it, right? Right.
It is, for sure. And it is, we do have an incredible amount of privilege that this is a possibility. And there are certainly families that this is proving much more difficult. Mm. You know, in the Seattle School District, they actually had at one point shut down all of the online learning because there were families that couldn't access it. And then the superintendent of public education came out and said, no, you need to figure out a way to create equity in this and to provide education. But there are so many wonderful new ways of connecting and learning. And look, it's not ideal in many cases. I don't think kindergartners are meant to learn online, right?
Right.
Because when you're a kindergartner, the number one skill that you need are social skills, mm-hmm. and learning to do things like sit in a circle or sit on your spot on the mat and be right. quiet while your teacher talks, right? And I've been hearing reports that, you know, from clients and friends that have kids of that age range, that it is chaos
right.
when these kids are getting online and trying to connect with their teacher. But there are also some amazing things coming out of it. And as you pointed out, Beth, you know, for your daughter who's a senior in high school, which my heart just breaks for these kids that, you know, are in those later years of schooling, especially the seniors. And this was supposed to be like this great semester of saying goodbye. So I'm grateful that we do have the ability to create new and different ways for them to connect with each other and create memories that will be important.
And Christy, right. was like, for Takara's point about schools trying to ramp up and think about extracurricular activities, like forget this, the course stuff. It's amazing right. to me. My daughter was so excited yesterday because she had to run and get ready to audition for OneX. I'm like, I can't really get my head around it. But seniors will write a play and then cast and direct it themselves. So somehow the school is figuring out a way in which to move forward with that and allow the kids, I mean, it'll be fascinating to see. But it just warmed my heart to think that she was really excited to run and go do that. And
yeah.
Yeah. And I think the irony here, I don't know what, I'd love to get both of your take on it, but here we are using screens to do things that I find to be imperative and foster critical thinking and really, you know, foster a love of the arts and things that I believe are much more important than rote learning and that will help you even more so when you get to college. And certainly what I'm seeing in the workplace is that some of the soft skills are eroded. So to have this opportunity for the school to have to think, well, they're at home, so let's cast a play. What are you learning? You're actually learning teamwork. You mm-hmm. might have to memorize a line. You might have to look at the deeper meaning of the script. I mean, there's so many things that go into and how you interpret it and how you're going to portray it, which to me is what will happen maybe in a meeting in 10 years down the line, which is much more important than your math fix that you're learning or your algebraic equation that you may never use again that you're learning in high school. And the same with the arts, learning an art class from some of these renowned artists are, you know, it's a discipline in and of itself. It's using your creativity when you're so stressed this way. Creativity is the one outlet we have, and to use our brain in a deeper way that we believe as professionals is a more important and critical way. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, I couldn't agree more, Kara. And I actually am just putting together as a designer, and I have taught at the college level. Friends have reached out to me to create a class for their kids that in some cases, again, like the privileged part of it, their kids don't have these extracurricular things happening. So I was really happy that I could create that and also work with a group of kids that will kind of fake it as we make it, right? Like, let's try this. Let's see how this goes. Let's pivot it. If it doesn't work, how do you teach? I'm sort of fascinated by the idea of creativity, which is a shared, you want to think of it as collaborative and also tactile. And how do you do that online? Well, we're going to try and we're going to learn as we go. And I think what else is so lovely, Kara, extension of what you were saying is the group that I'm putting together, one child's in Oakland, one's in Berkeley, two are in Manhattan. and one's in upstate New York. So how cool for these kids to have this national, I called it like our national team. They're going to meet people from different places. It'll give them the chance. I'm super thoughtful about what these young kids in Manhattan are going to have to say about what they're feeling versus the kids in Oakland, or, you know, that certainly it's alive and real here, but it can't feel like what they're feeling in Manhattan. So that is, I think, a huge gift, is just that sharing and maybe trying to eliminate some of the divisiveness too. Like, we really are learning that we are a greater community, or we have to be a greater community right now. So,
yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with everything that both of you have said. And I think we are seeing creativity come out from people in really unexpected and wonderful ways. And you just described a perfect example of that, Beth, of how you can use your own creativity to create this community for kids. A friend of mine whose daughter goes to a different school than mine, you know, got her sort of harnessed her resources and created an online Zoom book club for a bunch of fifth graders to read a book that they wouldn't normally read in school, you know, but that they can all learn from. And it's a way for kids from, again, you know, different schools in our area to meet and get to know one another. But one of the critical pieces of that, and this, I don't know, I don't unintentionally mean to pivot the conversation, but one of the critical pieces about that is that it is done, especially for our younger kids, but for our older ones too, it's done with the supervision and sort of direction of an adult who can make sure that what is happening in that online space is safe for our kids. Because that, you know, I love all the wonderful things that we're seeing come out of the ability to connect online. But, you know, sort of in the back of my mind, I'm also very cognitive of the fact that there are additional risks that our children are being exposed to as well during all of that. And so making sure that when we're getting creative, when we're creating these new communities and these new ways of connecting, that we are also trying to be, you know, aware and careful, and not to the point of paranoia. But I heard a doctor actually put it really well recently, and she was talking about the pandemic, but that we want to be just afraid enough that we are prepared, right? Not paralyzed by it, but prepared.
Right.
And I think I think that holds true in the online space as well as in dealing with this overall, you know, the overall COVID pandemic.
And what do you think, what comes to mind first when you think about what do we expose, or what are the potential exposures that they can have?
Yeah, so certainly depending on what platforms online our children are accessing, I think we're going to see an uptick in some of the online contact by predators, you know, some of the predatory behavior through platforms like Instagram and, you know, even things like TikTok. And some of those other online platforms that kids use. You know, for teens in particular right now, I'm still in that sweet spot where I don't need to worry quite as much because my daughter doesn't have her own devices, right? And so it's much easier for me to monitor. But for those tweens, older tweens and teens, who the only way that they can connect with their friends right now is through online spaces. And I want to be clear, like, that is really important for teens and tweens. That is developmentally appropriate for them to want to connect with their peer group. And parents should work to foster that. But we do need to be careful about sort of the potential for unknown people or forces to sort of come into that space. And we have a whole lot of people sitting at home right now, not able to go to their jobs, not able to do the work that they normally do, who are also on screens. That might be using that time in a way that we don't want them to, right? That's not healthy for our children. So that's the first thing that I'm sort of aware of. And then I think the second piece of this is really sort of more home-based, and that is just an awareness that people, all of us, adults and kids alike, often behave in ways on screens and say things on screens and over media, social media in particular, that we wouldn't say or do in person, we've removed all the in-person contact. And so that normalizing factor has kind of been taken away. And so there's that sort of the importance of helping our kids maintain responsible digital citizenship. It's like a tongue twister this morning. While they are online, and that they know how to manage or handle it when other people are not behaving responsibly with their digital citizenship. So those are sort of the two key areas for me that come to mind when I think of some of the new, or I shouldn't say new, but really augmented things that we're dealing with. Yeah.
I think about Kara's always referencing not to jump in with people, right? Like, I think that whole conversation about not being a great digital citizen is flexing that part in you where you don't jump in, right? You see something heinously worded and you don't, your instinct is not like, oh, I'm going to tell that person what I think. Mm-hmm. It's almost bringing more kindness into that situation. And I mean, I've certainly noticed that. I'm sure we've all had an experience of that politically within social media, and I've been so worn down by that. I've noticed in myself recently where I have no desire anymore to win these arguments because I don't think they're winnable. Right. Maybe my stand is I'm going to be kind. I'm going to say, right, I appreciate that. Wow. But I see it this way, and it's really hard. And so I think there could be so many lessons, Christy, if you have any wisdom to help people, because that's a really, and everyone is on edge, right?
Yeah. And it's so much harder when our own emotions are running really high. You know, and I have found, I mean, okay, so with this pandemic, there are a lot of big feelings and people are stewing with those big feelings a lot more, right? Or using things to sort of stuff them down and then they explode out. So we're stuck in our homes with these big emotions and a screen. And even as adults, even those of us who are kind, responsible people, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I have occasionally found it very difficult to step back and to not engage online. You know, when you see people making decisions around this pandemic that you find to be irresponsible, given, you know, my family's taking it very seriously and we are quarantining and all of that. And it is hard sometimes to be, you know, to not want to shout from the rooftops like that you need to stay at home. The group of adult professionals in the legal field, where I posted a question, you know, not with the intention of being reckless around the pandemic or disregarding any of the recommendations that, or laws that are, you know, being imposed right now, and asked a question, and you would have thought the devil incarnate people were just jumping down my throat and were really nasty about how could you even ask this question? The question was coming from a genuine place of, I don't know. I don't know the answer to this in this situation. And that left me really struck with, first of all, we have to get ourselves under control, right? And leading with that, and, you know, at the risk of sounding cheesy, like, we really do need to lead with love right now. We need to lead with love on the online space, and we need to lead with love in our families. And so if we are not able to manage our own emotions online, it is really difficult to jump in there and teach our children how to manage theirs. So that's sort of that first most important piece. And then the second one, you know, as we're navigating these new worlds, you know, my daughter is now communicating on Zoom, something she'd never done before. We are considering letting her communicate with her friends over the Facebook Messenger app for kids, just so she has, again, a way to connect with them. We're going to be having lots and lots of conversations in our house about what does responsible digital citizenship mean? What does it mean to be kind online? And the fact that that's really not any different than what it means to be kind in person, except that it's almost an additional level of kindness is warranted, because when we read words through a screen, we can't interpret them in the same way that we can when we're reading someone's face and their body language and interacting with them in person. So if anything, we need to be teaching children and ourselves, frankly, that adding an additional level or layer of kindness to our online interactions is time well spent right now.
Yeah, I think those are such great points, Christy, because whether you're an adult or you're daughter who's now just learning how to interact, we all know that at the basis, one of the ways we interact as human beings is we mirror. So if you say hi super enthusiastically, someone's going to give you a hi back. And if you walk up and you're like hi, you're kind of like, oh, hi. It's just natural. But the different energy that we could throw to someone by greeting them with an enthusiastic hi, even if they greet us with a very, you know, introverted or even grumpy hello, is something that we have all seen happen. And it is the very same way online. So when my daughter started texting, one of the rules we put out there is you are not allowed to get in a fight. You are just not allowed to get in a texting fight or a fight online. And she's like, what are you talking about? Why would I ever? Well, I said, anytime you're angry, or even if somebody responds angry to you, just come and tell me. So I cannot count the number of times she banged open my door screaming, you know, look at what she wrote. Do you want to know what I want to say back? And I let her emote and get it out, because if her friend was right in front of her, she would have said something very different. So get it out first and then write a response, and know that, you know, you would want to write a response that you would say, and you would during this time, certainly say it with kindness. So I think that's a really good point that you bring up. And I'm glad that we all have to come up with different rules and different things that we have to self-regulate before we even respond, so that it can help us.
Yeah. And I think it's also really helpful right now to remember that literally everyone is functioning under an increased amount of stress right now.
Yeah.
And when we are stressed and when we are anxiety ridden, or depressed, or all of the above, we don't function in the same way. And so when we get those responses, so when people were saying really, you know, I called it Facebook yelling. When they were Facebook yelling at me yesterday, I tried to respond with kindness and say, you know, I understand your point, and I'm legitimately asking this question because I don't know the answer. Because there's a lot of things right now that we don't know. Mm-hmm. And so if we can respond to that Facebook yelling or the Instagram yelling or whatever it might be with a layer of kindness, I think that says a lot about us, because it is allowing us to sort of sit in empathy with these people and remember they are stressed too.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have likened this time, and I've talked to Beth about this and others too, that we're grieving, and we're almost pre-grieving because we know what's to come, and this is a long time coming, and we all know that grief is a very lonely process, and everybody handles the stages of grief very differently. And so knowing that somebody's so alone in their thoughts and they might not know how to express them in their highest brain emotional state is coming to them with empathy. And you mentioned our seniors, Beth and I both have senior high schoolers. And then in addition, I have a senior college son. And they do think that, like, we made this virus up to ruin their senior year. I mean, you know, or for a while they think that, you know, because they're very myopic and they're mourning the loss of what would have been the end of their senior year. And while my initial reaction is, you know, get over it. Do you know people are losing their lives, losing their jobs, whatever. The more empathy I show to them, the more they meet me and even apologize for saying some ridiculous things. And I think the same goes for when our kids are bored. So instead of being angry or trying to rescue them, if we could just empathize with them, but allow them to still sit in their boredom, I think that, you know, is allowing for space and growth for something else to happen.
Yeah, I gotta say, and this may sound like a weird comment, but I actually love boredom. I think boredom is amazing for children.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
We both agree. Yeah, we would agree with you, Christine.
Yeah, sure. And whether we're in the middle of a pandemic or it's summer and there aren't any friends around to play with, you know, or hang out with, or whatever, I think boredom is the what's the word I want to look for? You know, it's really the foundation of creativity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we aren't bored, you know, and that's the problem. One of the problems right now is that I think we have this, we are mourning and our children are mourning. And so we want to fill their days and we want them to not be sad about it. But we have to both let them sit with their emotions around this. And we have to teach them that, you know, we don't just fill our days with things to make the other stuff go away. So we can let them feel their feelings and then let them experience what it means to be bored. It is not our obligation as their parents or as educators to fill every minute of their day. And when we do let them experience that, you know, what am I going to do now? It's amazing the things that they will come up with regardless of how old they are. And, you know, I know I'm speaking sort of on the younger side of things, but I walked into my youngest daughter's room this morning and she and my older one had blankets spread across, you know, from the dresser to the bookshelf, to the crib, to like, they had created this huge tent fort and they had all these little rooms and they were, you know, they had gone to town with this. And it was really phenomenal and something that doesn't happen when my fifth grader is at school.
Right.
Now, obviously,
I would argue okay. even the whole, you know, Cara and I having older kids than yours, it's more anecdotal. I don't have the science in front of me, but I think parenting has taken us to this place where we aren't comfortable, or we haven't been comfortable even pre-pandemic with them being bored. So remembering that boredom is where beautiful creativity, problem solving, you know, where that we develop who we're going to be. It's been an uncomfortable thing for a long time. And this is, you know, Cara and I had a great conversation with Sarah Lacey, and she so clearly pointed out that this pandemic is bringing to the forefront so many issues of our greater culture. And I think, you know, and we could break this conversation down similarly, but the lack of our comfort with our children being bored. Cara will also often say, like, you just can't solve. You can't jump in there and solve all of these issues for your kids. You must let them go through it. And those are those uncomfortable moments for us culturally. And as well as, I would add, the grief part. I would argue, as a culture, pre-pandemic, we're so uncomfortable with the mourning process. And when someone expresses loss that they're going through, people turn away from that, right? Mm-hmm. I almost long for, and as a clothing designer, I long for the days when we used to wear those stripes on your bicep when you were in grief, right? Like a black band you wore, which was a signal like this person is in a different space, and to be kinder, right? It was this cultural reminder to hold them differently. And we don't do that very well. So now the entire nation is grieving and we don't know where to look, and we certainly can't look away, but we're so uncomfortable with it.
We're really uncomfortable with it. And, you know, I think, well, a couple of things I want to say in response to that. You know, first of all, around the grief piece, you, for example, both of you with seniors in high school and one senior in college, they are grieving. But the reality is, I suspect that both of you are grieving as well. Over, you know, the loss of what that meant for you as a parent to celebrate, you know, helping a child reach adulthood and make it through high school, or really reach adulthood and make it through college. You know, that's a celebration for parents as well. And there are a lot of connecting things that happen for parents in that final year of an education experience, as well as for the students themselves. And so it's really hard to stop and help our children through their grief when we are also grieving. And so I think we have to start by just acknowledging that piece, that yes, you're sad for them, and also sad for yourselves because this sucks.
Right.
You know, and so there's that piece of it. And then, oh, Beth, there's something else that you touched on. Oh, the fact that, you know, the emotions that we're having and sort of the things that we're experiencing collectively and sort of the wisdom that is coming out of this pandemic, whether it's around managing screens and online safety or managing our emotions or, you know, boredom or whatever it is we are definitely getting some larger lessons that are absolutely true. You know, they were true 6 months ago and they will be true 6 years from now. You know, Cara knows this, but I just put on a summit of a bunch of experts for parents to try to offer people in the parenting space some support. And Cara was one of my speakers on that. And it was amazing how as every speaker, you know, as we went through that summit, and it's still ongoing at the time that we're recording this, but as we went through all of that, every piece of wisdom that was offered, and I commented on it a number of times, was something that applied before this and should absolutely apply afterward, but we're just seeing it under a microscope right now. And so I do hope that can ultimately be a gift for people, you know, and that we can sort of recognize the importance of those little bits of wisdom, like allowing our kids to be bored and use it now and use it when we come out of this.
I know yesterday the alert came on my phone. Yeah. So I'm in San Francisco and we didn't even talk about this, Cara, but San Francisco is now on stay in place till at least May 3rd, which is a whole nother month, right? And my daughter's school had been sort of, you know, hopefully putting it out there that April 17th, they would be back on campus, you know, knowing that there was a great unlikeliness to that, but that was the hope. And so my heart just broke. And I thought, like, in my instantaneous reaction was, oh, I've got to tell her. And then I thought, no, I don't. And I will tell her. I can't make this better for her in this moment. And
right.
And also, I kind of felt like I had to get in there and tell her first, because she won't be able to take it if she hears it from somebody else. And although I want to help her through this, I can't save her from this, right? I can just support her through it. But I think that there are these, to your point, Christy, like how that was heartbreaking for me to see as a, you know, for myself and then for her. And then I started to just sort of spiral down that this was just too much. And then I had to stop myself and think like, no, we will do this, right? It's just another month.
Yeah.
Another
and everybody, I got the same alert, Beth and Christy. Nobody has ever said that to me or Beth or any senior parent that I know, like, you're grieving. So thank you for that. That's a really kind way, because when you're the caretaker, whether it's because you're the head of your business or because you're your mother, a mother or whatever you are, I think that you often forget to check in with yourself.
Yeah.
And that's when maybe your online mini self comes out or whatever, because you're not administering any self-compassion to yourself. And I think that's a very important point, that you're grieving. And so what would you do, you know, for your kids when they're grieving? You need to offer that to yourself. So
yeah.
I think that's a really great point.
Yeah. Yeah. And we forget, because especially as moms, but I know dads do this too, we forget to check in with ourselves, especially right now, because we are so busy trying to manage everybody else and everything else, right?
Yeah.
And I certainly don't mean to exclude dads from that comment, because I know my husband feels like he's managing a lot right now, you know, as he works from home, and we are, you know, not just managing the nitty-gritty daily existence. What, you know, what math work does she need to do? What reading homework does she have? What are we going to feed each other? What are we going to feed this family for dinner tonight? You know, when we haven't been to the grocery store in 2 weeks because we're trying to minimize our trips, but also managing I want to phrase it differently. We shouldn't be trying to manage our children's emotions. We should be trying to teach them how to manage their emotions, you know, how to feel the emotions and how to find ways to make them feel better in a healthy, productive, mindful way. But in order to do that, we also have to check in with ourselves and manage our emotions and feel our feelings and be mindful about what's going on. And I think there is a world, a collective world of parents out there right now that are grieving. And, you know, I think I would be grieving far more if my daughter were graduating from high school mm-hmm. or college. But there's this series of rituals at mm-hmm. our school that the fifth graders go through as well. And I, you know, where we get to see the kids, they always have done this big slideshow where you see pictures of the kids as babies and kindergartners and then as yes. fifth graders. And I am grieving the fact that it's highly unlikely that we're going to get to do that. You know, we're right. sort of bracing for the idea that the schools may very well be shut down for the rest of the year. There are districts around the country that have already made that call. And I'm finding it easier to just sort of brace myself for that now and then be surprised later if that's not the case. But that is a lot to come to grips with.
Yeah. And plus, by managing your emotions, it's so great to say it that way. Instead of managing your children's emotions, teach them how to manage their emotions. But how do you do that? Through modeling. If you can't manage your own emotions, they're going to see it.
Right.
They're going to notice, and then they won't learn. So
right. Now, I do want to be really clear, though. When I say like manage our emotions, I think it is okay for us as moms and dads to let our children see that we do have real feelings, right? That we can cry during this. And I know there's a lot of parents that are afraid of letting their children see them cry because they're afraid that it will scare their kids. And I actually disagree. I think it humanizes us to our kids. Now, I mean, if we are like completely losing it and breaking down, like where we're a puddle on the floor, you know, maybe that's not a healthy thing to do with our children. But I think it's okay for them to see us feeling sad and feeling upset and, you know, whatever those emotions are. And then, as you just pointed out with the modeling piece, model, how do we get mindful with it? How do we ground ourselves? How do we sort of get back to our heart center mm-hmm. and move forward? Because we have to keep moving forward.
I think that the scared part, I met with a group of parents that I support, and many of them said that they just don't want their kids to be scared. Right? Like, you know, we want our kids to be happy and jolly all the time. I just don't want my kids to be scared. Well, A, that's not life, right? Everybody has a mix of emotions. But also B, if you're not scared during this time, then what are you? Like a child cannot understand. Right. You can't understand. You can't draw the conclusion, why am I not going to school? You know, well, because there's a reason to be scared, right? Why is my mom not letting me play outside? But the flip side of that is some of them said that they were allowing their children to watch the news. And I think that that's what we talk about when we talk about consuming and creating. And you need, like when my older two kids were of the age, kindergarten and maybe second or third grade, when 9/11 happened. And I remember limiting the amount of time they could see the news or turning it off, right? If they came in the room or waiting till they went to bed, because I just didn't think that they could handle it. Now, of course I had to explain to them why I picked them up in the middle of the day and it took us 4 hours to get home in Chicago traffic that day. But I didn't want them to on repeat, see those images over and over and over again, because I didn't want them to be traumatized.
Yeah.
But I think there's a balance between that, and it comes back into play about the consuming and what is healthy consuming. And I definitely, for us as adults, I think many of us have to monitor the amount we're consuming, because otherwise we're overwrought and stressed out. So
I have to share with, or can I share the class that I'm teaching for these teenagers is based on a book by Andrew Kuo called What Me Worry. And he does this beautiful breakdown via graphs, kind of taking your emotions And I love the idea because we're all about data these days, right? So big data, everything's data analytics. But then it's looking at it through the lens of art. And if we break out our day in these segmentations of like what I wanted to translate his work into was, yeah, okay, we're going to worry a little bit now. We probably are worrying, to your point, Cara, like we can't make it seem like you're learning every day on Zoom and you can't go back to school because there's nothing to worry about. These are kind of big things. So like, let's take the worry head on, but then let's look at it. And I wanted to say like, well, in this day of worry, how much joy do you have? How much are you, you know, what's the greatest thing you did today? What's your favorite new thing you did? Like, where did you take a risk? What made you laugh? And then we're just going to graph it, but do it in a way that brings art and color. And then we see if joy is the littlest slice of your day, then we need to focus on joy. How do we bring more joy? We're going to still maybe be worried, but we can balance worry and joy and maybe just try to create more space in these happier places while we still have a little worry in us. And I think that's helping them, to your point of like, connect to these feelings. We have these feelings.
Yeah.
Now, where do we go with these feelings, right? And help them.
And I think, you know, so many of us as adults were never taught to manage our feelings in a healthy way. And so we have the distinct impression that our children are incapable of managing these feelings. And the reality is, you know, Cara, to your point, you said these parents are like, well, I don't want my child to feel scared. And I understand that instinct, right? We are hardwired to protect our children. But what child hasn't ever felt scared, right? When mama or dada walked out of the room and they were left in their bed by themselves, or they're left in the dark, or mom left for work and that was scary. These kids know these emotions and they've known them since the time they were born. They are core, real emotions. And so we have to lean into a little bit, I think, the idea that as humans, we are hardwired to experience emotion and we are capable of doing that. What we have to do for them is, one, make sure it's age appropriate. So, you know, just like when you were shutting the TV off and not letting your kids watch, you know, the Twin Towers fall, right now we should not be showing our children videos, especially the young ones, videos of hospitals in Italy. Right? There is no purpose to be served in that. And that is not age-appropriate parenting. But talking to them about the fact that people are getting sick, you know, and there are some people that are getting really sick and even dying from this, you know, and again, I'm sort of referring to that younger set of kids, they are capable of managing that if we teach them the skills to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, teach them to say, yep, we're scared. So we're going to control what we can control, right? We're going to wash our hands. We're going to stay in our house. We're going to be careful about how we get our groceries. We're going to, you know, whatever A, B, and C are that we're going to do. And we're going to sit and do yoga together or meditate or watch a movie as a family and talk about it, you know, that makes us feel good. So that, you know, we're not shutting them away from those emotions or somehow sending the message to them that they are incapable of feeling those feelings in a, you know, in a manageable way. Because that just translates into an adult that then doesn't know how to manage their emotions. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any productivity in that, but we do need to make sure that it's age appropriate. And what both of your kids can handle at their older ages is dramatically different than what my two kids can handle right now. Mm-hmm. And so we just have to parent to that in the way that we, you know, do everything else age appropriate.
You know, at my daughter's school, another challenge, like the how do you take extracurricular activities and put it online? They were talking about service learning, and her school has a every grade level has a different commitment to service learning, but the school is grounded in service. So it was hard to imagine, especially for these seniors, because it's sort of the culmination of their service. But taking the service to a personal level, to look at your neighborhood and think, even if it's like if your only service is acknowledging your elderly neighbor who might need you and turning that service into a greater sense of community, to me, that is the greatest lesson that can come from this. And potentially, you know, at times I think, has our greater culture have we walked away from empathy? Have we walked away certainly from community? This is one of the things I hope will come racing to the forefront of how do we get back to just all of us staying in place. Your conversation, mm-hmm. Chrissy, about your friends all up in arms because you wanted to connect to your parents. That's you're taking this tremendous conviction to staying in place because of the greater community aspect, right? You don't want to create any issues for anyone else because you need to see your parents desperately.
Right.
And I think those are the gestures that we are seeing. And when we are our best selves, when we can, you know, make those tough, isolating, greater community decisions to keep us all safe.
And Beth, that's a great point because one of the final stages of grief is to find purpose. And so I love that how this conversation went and we talked about pre-pandemic and during the pandemic and post-pandemic, some of the things that were the same, some of the things that never will be the same. But while we're grieving through this process, and even if we're doing it isolated, this way to do it as a community in the final stage is to do it with a purpose. And what is the meaning that we went through all of this? And part of the meaning is to be of service to others. And that in that is finding purpose. So I think with that final stage, it kind of culminates all of these wonderful points that that you both have discussed and brought so eloquently to this podcast about things we can do to help each other, to perhaps be self-disciplined and not react and more respond. And, you know, Chrissy, some of your ideas about being very careful, you know, knowing that this is a new time and knowing that they can maybe taking away the amount of time that's screen time, but what they're actually consuming is very safe, as well as administering to yourself. So I don't know if you guys have anything else that you want to share that is a good takeaway for you from this conversation.
I guess, you know, I would just say I love the twists and turns this conversation has taken. And I know we sort of started talking out a little, or talking about screens and how we are responsible digital citizens and, you know, sort of that safety piece, which we didn't dive into in great detail, but
we'll have you on again.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
There's so much to talk about.
Yes. There's so much, but I think we've touched on this sort of bigger thing, which is this idea that how we can get through this in the immediate sense in a more intentional and mindful way. But then what are the gifts that we can really take away from this? And, you know, when I say gifts, I'm always careful right now to recognize that there are people that are grieving actual loss, right? You know, they have lost a loved one. And that certainly does not feel like a gift in any stretch of the imagination. But for at least at this point, for many, many of us, we are finding some really beautiful positives that are coming out of this. And I hope that those seniors and the fifth graders and, you know, they can see that the importance of connection, real in-person connection, you know, how important that really is because they connect on their screens a lot, you know, even during regular times. But as soon as that's taken away, I think we've all realized how really important it is that physical touch and that being with people in community. And I hope that is something that we can all take away from this and grow with as a collective society.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And I would just say that adding onto that, just a sort of radical kindness, right? And to be so mindful that everyone is doing their best, even when their best doesn't look so good, right? Or so doesn't sound so good, right?
Yeah.
But I try to keep that at the forefront, and it's not easy.
Right. I think it's the hardest to do for yourself. So I think radical self-kindness is something that I always like to highlight because when we worry about everybody else's emotion, we often forget our own. And from that comes a lot of great things when we can serve ourselves. So hard to do, I recognize. But thank you guys so much for all of your contributions and your thoughts and your insight and your wisdom, your sharing here. I'm certain is going to be really very, very helpful for some of our listeners. So thank you both.
Thank you
so much.
Yeah, this was really fun. I appreciate the opportunity to get to speak with both of you today.
Well, so great to chat, Chrissy. And I do, we have so much more to talk about. So you will be back.
This episode of Mindfulness at Work has been sponsored by Adivi Corporation. Adivi is a world-class information technology service firm. They provide your business all the technology needs you may have in a secure, safe, and cost-effective way. Please contact Adivi Corporation, ADIVI.com, so that they may provide safety and security to your business too.
Thank you for listening to Mindfulness at Work. If you felt inspired by our conversation, we hope you'll share our podcast with your friends and colleagues.